funding for NJ Spotlight News provided by the members of the New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child, and RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, U.S. Senate candidate Tammy Murphy grabbing a much-needed victory in Bergen County, looking to slow down Andy Kim's convention win momentum.
I'm talking about the issues that are important to people and the policies, and I have ideas that will help get us unstuck in Washington, D.C.
Plus, the vice president taking the administration's toughest stance, calling for a ceasefire as the death toll in Gaza exceeds 30,000.
But for the first time, a senior White House official expressed, in my view, appropriate empathy with victims on both sides of this conflict. That is a shift.
Also, filling the void. The state's judicial vacancy crisis may be coming to an end as confirmation of new judges begins to resolve the backlog of trials.
We're getting where we should be, and I think the court systems are getting a lot more normalized now.
And breaking news, 14 new charges in the Menendez bribery case after his co-defendant Jose Uribe flips. New allegations of conspiracy, obstruction of justice, along with new details of the senior senator acting as a foreign agent. NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Tuesday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. Across the nation, millions of Americans are voting on this Super Tuesday, the biggest day of the presidential primaries in the 2024 election cycle. 16 nominating contests that'll set the stage for November's pivotal race. In New Jersey, politicos are fresh off what many dubbed a Super Monday in the hotly contested battle for the U.S. Senate. First Lady Tammy Murphy locked in a big win during Monday night's Bergen County Democratic Convention, which awards her the coveted county line, a ballot position in the June primary that's favorable to the candidate who wins it. More than 1,100 delegates cast votes. 64% went for Murphy. A little over a third went to rival Congressman Andy Kim. It's Murphy's first win in a traditional convention, and a senior political correspondent, David Cruz, reports, gives her campaign the edge as the primary draws closer.
For Tammy Murphy, it was finally time to exhale and to do some public celebrating for a change. Despite the fact that she was expected to win here, the First Lady's victory showed that in big counties like Bergen, the apparatus can overcome the insurgents, even in a secret ballot.
I am really excited speaking to people up and down the state. If you had been standing next to me, as you had heard all the conversations I was having, people are genuinely enthusiastic. I'm talking about the issues that are important to people and the policies, and I have ideas that will help get us unstuck in Washington, D.C.
The event drew enthusiastic delegates whose partisan demonstrations on the street outside the Union Hall gave the scene a distinct Jersey vibe. Inside, cacophony, with candidates struggling to be heard over the din of delegates.
In the three decades that I have been around and involved in politics, I have never, ever seen 1,157 delegates.
Backed by powerful County Chairman Paul Giuliano, Murphy got 64% of the vote to Kim's 36, a resounding win that left the usually upbeat Kim complaining about an uneven playing field.
Right from the outset, the chairman immediately came in and endorsed the First Lady within, 48 hours of her announcing a race. Never returned my phone calls until about maybe 4 days ago, not giving me the same opportunities. We know he's hosted multiple events for her. So it was never a fair fight. But I wanted to show and come here and say, hey, look, I'm not scared of the machine. And over 400 people also said that they're not scared of the machine.
I think we're all in the same process across the state. We're all competing with the same rules. And, I think that if the rules change and we have reform, that's one thing. But for right now, we're all in the same boat together.
While many here were celebrating small D democracy in action, former Senator Loretta Weinberg, who's not endorsed anyone in this race but has certainly sparred with party leaders in the past, said that Democrats around the state should see that open primaries are good for business.
This is the first big populated northern county, I guess. But I wish people in Middlesex and Hudson and Passaic would look at this and decide to follow suit. And we'd have an open Democratic Party.
Murphy's win resets the race. Large counties lay ahead and most won't even require secret ballots. Good for her and a challenge for Kim, who's had his momentum blunted, at least for now. I'm David Cruz, NJ Spotlight News.
And we have breaking news tonight in the sweeping federal bribery case against U.S. Senator Bob Menendez. Yet another superseding indictment. This is the third since Menendez, his wife, and three co-defendants were charged last September. The newest indictment adds 14 total new charges, a dozen for Menendez, including conspiracy to obstruct justice and obstruction of justice. The 66-page document provides new details on conversations between Nadine Menendez and businessman Jose Uribe, a co-defendant who just days ago pleaded guilty and agreed to cooperate with prosecutors. The pair allegedly discussed payments Uribe made for a Mercedes-Benz convertible and the Menendez's mortgage and told law enforcement the money was a loan, knowing full well it was a bribe. Prosecutors accusing Menendez of accepting the luxury car, gold bars, and hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash in exchange for using his political influence for the businessmen, including Uribe. Menendez, his wife, and the two other defendants have all pleaded not guilty. Turning now to the crisis in the Middle East, a senior leader with Hamas says it's given a response to ceasefire proposals mediated by Egyptian and Qatari officials. Hamas is demanding a permanent end to the war before any hostages are released. This as senior White House members are meeting this week with the political rival of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Vice President Kamala Harris holding talks with Benny Gantz, Israel's former defense minister and a member of Israel's war cabinet. Vice President Harris expressing the administration's toughest stance yet on the war, calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and urging Hamas to agree to a six-week pause in the conflict. That's to release prisoners and enable more aid to flow into the region. The Gaza Health Ministry says the death toll has now surpassed 30,000 since the war began. For more on what the talks happening in Washington could mean for a possible ceasefire, I'm joined by Trita Parsi. He's the co-founder and executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Trita Parsi, always good to get your insight. I'd like to ask you first about what you make of this response that is reportedly coming from a senior leader within Hamas about talks for a ceasefire, essentially saying a six-week deal doesn't look like it's on the table. Hamas wants a permanent ceasefire, the commitment of aid, relief, reconstruction. What do you make of this response, and does it put these negotiations back to where they started?
I think the critical thing in the response by Hamas is, which is quite expected, to be frank, is that they're not going to give up all hostages for a temporary ceasefire. So I don't think a ceasefire is off the table, but essentially they recognize that they have leverage through the hostages, unfortunately. And as a result, they're not going to give all of that up in return for a very limited ceasefire. They're talking about a permanent ceasefire in return for all of the hostages. This creates a very, very tricky situation, of course. On the one hand, the Israelis don't want to agreed to a full ceasefire. But on the other hand, it means that on a daily basis, the Israelis are killing between 150 and 200 civilians in Gaza, many of them, if not the majority of them, women and children. That turns then the entire Gazan population de facto into hostages to this war as well.
We saw a real shift this week, Trita, in the tone, the rhetoric from the White House, specifically from the vice president. How much does that factor in to what we might see change in the U.S.'s policy stance on this?
We have seen that Vice President Harris actually has been taking a harsher tone with the Israelis throughout this conflict than it was presumed to be a calculated difference between the White House and the Vice President on that issue. But in terms of the substance of it, it's not clear if there was anything in particular there that is actually very different from what the White House already has been saying. They have been favoring a ceasefire, but it's a ceasefire completely on Israel's terms, which is a very limited ceasefire in time. In this time dimension, and a complete release of all the hostages.
Does someone like a Benny Gantz, the former defense minister for Israel, who's meeting with Kamala Harris, who today met with Antony Blinken, does he have significant negotiations and persuasion within this administration? I mean, we know that he is not here on the prime minister's wishes. Yet he's having these very high-level talks at the same time that we're seeing a lot more pressure come from the U.S.
Well, I have to be frank with you. I fully understand the White House wants to be able to talk to Benny Gantz. It's a way for them to express their frustration with the Netanyahu government, who has essentially ignored everything the Biden administration has asked them to do. I mean, the fact that the U.S. has to put airlifting aid into Gaza instead of just using the trucks, which is a much more expensive and dangerous, shows that, you know, the White House has almost systematically caved to Netanyahu on these different issues. So it's understandable that they want to talk to other people in the administration. But I think it, at the end of the day, actually signals more weakness. If they actually want to get things done, they should just put pressure on Netanyahu as the superpower the United States is, as the power that actually is providing all the weapons that Israel is using. The idea that the United States does not have leverage is preposterous. It does. It's that Biden doesn't want to use it. And instead, playing these silly games by talking to Gantz, et cetera, in order to upset Netanyahu, et cetera, I just feel that this is not the appropriate way for a superpower to deal with this situation.
Trita Parsi, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Commuters had another chance today to speak out on New Jersey Transit's proposed fare hikes that'll go up 15% system-wide starting in July. The first hearing in Camden County was sparsely attended, and today's public hearing in Paterson wasn't much different. But a senior correspondent, Joanna Gagas, reports that doesn't mean the fare hikes are popular.
Look inside your agencies to see any type of bloating that you can cut out and try to not raise the rates on the taxpayers or the riderships.
NJ Transit commuters had another chance to testify at a public hearing today about the state's proposed fare hikes for riders, an attempt to close NJ Transit's looming $900 million plus fiscal cliff. The hearing held at Passaic County Community College.
Inflation is an all-time high. People are struggling to pay rent and utilities, put food on the table, and now face fare hikes.
Under the proposed plan, fares would go up 15% in fiscal year 2025 and then 3% every year after that, which advocates from Make the Road New Jersey say will punish the poorest among us.
I'm here today with my fellow bus riders to ask that you stop fare hikes and instead call on Governor Murphy to fully restore the corporate business tax.
Despite calls not to let the corporate business tax surcharge sunset in December, Governor Murphy stuck to his word that he wouldn't renew it. Well, kind of. During last week's budget address, the governor proposed a new tax on businesses called the corporate transit fee, a 2.5% tax on companies with more than $10 million in profits a year, rather than the $1 million threshold of the previous tax. And this money would be dedicated to NJ Transit.
It's an incredible first step. We need to make sure that we're fully restoring the corporate business tax. We're not leaving any money on the table. We're taxing profits over $1 million so that we can avoid things like a fare hike. So we're not putting more taxes on the working poor.
If they increase the price, then that's going to be kind of rough for me to keep going, especially if it be 15%.
One commuter said the agency should rent out its space in Hoboken train station.
And rent that out and make some revenue. I mean, it's about revenue. It's not necessarily on the backs of the ridership.
An approach that has the support of the Regional Plan Association.
We absolutely need to see as much transit-oriented development as possible. It's a really good way to not only bring in some revenue for the agency, but also to ensure that there's useful services and amenities around our transit stations, which is going to naturally increase ridership.
But if riders in general are outraged over a proposed fare increase, well, you wouldn't know it from the turnout today. Only three people showed up to voice their concerns, but those who did said NJ Transit needs to focus on making improvements to service before asking riders to pay more.
You're waiting for the bus, wet and cold on days like this, nervous that you'll be late to work or desperate to use a bathroom, but you can't leave in case the bus comes. So I'm shocked to hear that there is a fare hike with no improvement on services.
Stumbling to reach into my pocket, put the money in the box, pay my fair share. I just want to get to and from in one piece, the correct location. And if I call in with a complaint, follow up and do something.
Riders will have eight more chances to speak at hearings held all this week around the state. In Patterson, I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
The state's judicial vacancy crisis may finally be turning a corner. Late last week, a pause on all civil and divorce trials was finally lifted for Somerset, Hunterdon, and Warren counties. The lack of judges there caused trials to go on hold for more than a year and the backlog of cases to pile higher. The change comes after more judicial confirmations moved through the legislature, but many more remain. Senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan has the latest.
We're getting where we should be, and I think the court systems are getting a lot more normalized now.
Jersey's Bar Association president says that's good news. New Jersey's finally seating more Superior Court judges, filling gaping vacancies on the bench that caused backlogs so severe, New Jersey's Chief Justice froze civil and matrimonial trials in several counties across the state a year ago. On Monday, he lifted the moratorium for Hunterdon, Somerset, and Warren counties.
They've got four new judges there that they desperately needed to do the work in the family part in the civil division. And it seems like everybody's really working hard to try to get this done. It's just getting it over the finish line.
I think once you close the courts and people can't get before a judge, that's probably going to light a fire.
Republican Senator John Bramnick recalls March 2023 when New Jersey posted a 67-judge shortage. It's now down to 48 vacancies, with six more judges, mostly from Bergen, up for confirmation before the Senate Judiciary Committee this Thursday, and another 10 to 15 being vetted in the pipeline. Bramnick says it's a complicated political process involving senatorial approval.
Because the problem is you've got senators who have to sign off, and you have a governor who has to nominate, and they all have to talk to each other. So that's why I've said from day one, get everybody in the room once a month and say, okay, bring your judges, or you're not getting a judge.
If nominations in the pipeline get approved, Jersey courts will drop to 25 to 30 judicial vacancies. That's the overall limit set by Chief Justice Stuart Rabner for effectively serving the public. Right now, only Passaic County needs judges so badly, it still remains under a moratorium for civil and matrimonial cases. It's down 7 of 28 judges, and one more retires tomorrow.
The frustration is very, very high amongst the bar, and it's not the judges' faults. They just can't schedule the matters. They can only work so hard.
She says justice delayed means couples seeking divorce can't get resolution and kids get caught in the crossfire of custody battles.
The children are the ones that suffer the most. They continue to live in these dysfunctional families who have made it a priority to end the relationship, and there's just doesn't seem any end in sight because it dominoes. Each case filed now gets behind the other thousands that were filed before it.
They're having to put their children in therapy solely as a result of all of these delays and the kids really not knowing and being in limbo. And it's not fair. It's not fair to these families who are already under such high stress.
Attorney Marissa Baker represents clients across central and northern Jersey. She warns cases backed up during the moratorium will start moving forward, but clearing dockets will take time and clients will pay more.
I actually almost put it in my retainer agreement, right up front and center, that we can't predict how long your case will take or how much it will cost, specifically because of the judicial shortage.
How to avoid another shortage, another moratorium? Set a time clock so senators vote up or down on nominees within 90 days, the bar recommends. But lawmakers may not be willing to make that concession. I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
In our Spotlight on Business report, it looks like William Patterson University's decision to start a new school of nursing is paying off. The university says it now boasts the largest nursing student enrollment in all of North Jersey and the largest on any college campus in New Jersey. Enrollment now stands at more than 1,800 students across bachelor's, master's, and doctoral levels. That's according to university officials, with undergraduate nursing enrollment more than doubling since 2019. William Patterson launched a school of nursing last September to help fill the gaps of the ongoing nursing shortage. A statement from the university's president attributes the growth in large part to a partnership with Atlantic Health System and more options for earning a degree, like completing courses fully online. On Wall Street, stocks slid today, pulling further away from record highs. Here's how the markets closed. Well, for the first time in nearly a quarter century, the nation's most decorated battleship will be on the move. Battleship New Jersey is preparing for a trip down the Delaware later this month, leaving its spot along the Camden waterfront, heading to the same dock in the Philadelphia Navy Yard where it was built in 1940. Don't worry, though, it's not staying there. It's all part of a long overdue maintenance and repairs needed on the Navy's famed ship. Ted Goldberg hopped on board today for a tour before it makes its once-in-a-generation journey.
When you step onto the battleship New Jersey, it's a bit more explosive than your usual history lesson.
That's cool.
And a good deal louder. Before the famous battleship leaves for Philadelphia for long-awaited repairs, folks showed us around. From the deck's 5-inch guns.
They're the most popular naval weapon of the 20th century. So you're going to see them on big ships and small ships and aircraft carriers and destroyers and little Coast Guard cutters and battleships and everybody in between. Because they can do everything. We can use them against airplanes. This ship shoots down 20 planes with our 5-inch guns and our smaller anti-aircraft battery. But it can also shoot other ships.
To slightly quieter settings.
Welcome on into our captain's cabin.
Tour guide Libby Jones has worked for this floating museum for more than 5 years.
Watch your step getting in. You can sit in the chairs. You can push the buttons.
The battleship New Jersey has a half century of wartime experience, fighting in World War II, Vietnam, and the Persian Gulf, with plenty of weaponry aboard.
Some of those keys say nuclear permission to fire. Now, of course, the Navy will neither confirm nor deny the presence of nuclear weapons aboard their ships. However, they did leave us the keys.
The history lessons will soon be paused as the battleship leaves in 2 weeks to dry dock in Philadelphia. It'll be the first time in more than 30 years that this ship will be taken out of the water for repairs and a new paint job with a $10 million price tag.
From my perspective as CEO, I sort of view the ship's return to New Jersey as sort of a refresh for us. Taking that amount of enthusiasm that we've seen from folks who are interested in here and helping us to sort of push forward when we return in order to reinvigorate tourism and visitation.
Battleship New Jersey CEO Marshall Spivak acknowledges that these repairs are happening during the ship's busy season, but he says the longer they wait, the more expensive repairs become. Leaders joined today's tour to explain how important this ship is for Camden's tourism industry and Camden itself.
And when you have something like this here as part of tourism, this builds confidence and trust in the city of Camden, the community. It builds confidence in our kids, it builds confidence in our residents to know that people from far and wide come here to our city, to our community, to visit.
If you Google tourism in Camden, the battleship is the number one tourist destination. The aquarium may not want to hear that, other locations may not want to hear that, but here on the battleship, that is certainly something to take note of.
Philadelphia is where the ship was originally built in 1942. And if you want to see the repairs as they happened, you can check them out on the battleship's YouTube page.
As we move on and as the ship is there, there will be quite a bit of content from us. There's going to be so much content you're not going to know what to do with yourself. That I can guarantee you.
The battleship looks a little different now than normal. The radar tower is gone, and so is part of the top mast, so the battleship can fit underneath the Walt Whitman Bridge. Dry docking itself takes about 60 days, so it'll be a while until the ship is back in New Jersey waters, giving historical tours with the radar tower intact. In Camden, I'm Ted Goldberg, NJ Spotlight News.
That's going to do it for us tonight, but don't forget to download the NJ Spotlight News podcast so you can listen anytime. I'm Brianna Venosi. For the entire NJ Spotlight News team, thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you right back here tomorrow night.
NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years. And by the PSCG Foundation.
Have some water.
Look at these kids. What do you see? I see myself. I became an ESL teacher to give my students what I wanted when I came to this country. The opportunity to learn, to dream, to achieve, a chance to belong and to be an American. My name is Julia Toriani Crompton, and I'm proud to be an NJEA member.
NJM Insurance Group has been serving New Jersey businesses for over a century. As part of the Garden State, we help companies keep their vehicles on the road, employees on the job, and projects on track. Working to protect employees from illness and injury, to keep goods and services moving across the state. We're proud to be part of New Jersey. NJM, we've got New Jersey covered.